On April 6, 1994, the tiny Central African nation of Rwanda erupted in genocide. In just 100 days, nearly a million people were killed. Most belonged to the Tutsi minority and were killed by members of the Hutu majority. 8 years later, a handful of ringleaders have been tried by an international tribunal in Tanzania. But in Rwanda itself, more than 115,000 people accused of taking part in the genocide are still in prison awaiting trial. To get through the backlog of cases, Rwanda has begun an experiment in popular justice. More than 10,000 open-air people's courts called gachachas have begun hearing cases. Deborah George reports for American Radio Works and NPR News.
One of the most infamous massacre sites in Rwanda is on the outskirts of the capital, Kigali. It's a field covered with white crosses.
These are very few. The whole country is full of these crosses.
Karasira Venuste has told his story many times, how in the first days of the genocide, several thousand people went to a nearby school where Belgian peacekeepers were stationed. But the UN ordered the troops to the airport to help evacuate European civilians.
At around 3 p.m., they left. They went to the airport. And we cried, asking them, why are you leaving us? Why are you leaving us? They told us there will be some gendarme who will be coming to protect you. They just took off.
Less than 2 hours later, Hutu militia entered the school grounds. They marched the people along a dirt road to this spot, an open clearing, and the killing began.
It started around 5:30. It was around 6:30. They stopped, but very few survivors.
Venuste lost his right arm to a machete blow, but saved himself by lying under a pile of corpses. His wife and son also survived. His daughter is buried here among the wooden crosses. Venuste grew up with the militia leader who ordered the attack. The man was tried for war crimes at the International Tribunal in Tanzania. He's serving a life sentence.
I wish he could come back here. He sees all these crosses. Maybe he could understand how life is dear to each and everybody.
Venuste says he curses the International Tribunal when he sees pictures of the prisoners there, the leaders of the genocide. They're well-fed, testifying in suits and ties, and far away from the survivors of the tragedy they instigated. The majority of the perpetrators, though, the actual foot soldiers of the genocide, are in prison in Rwanda. The prison in Kibuye is separated from the town just by mud brick walls and a wire fence. It would be easy to walk away from here, but it almost never happens. Rwanda is a small, crowded country. There's no place to hide. So the thousands of prisoners spend their days like any other inhabitants of a small village, tending vegetable patches or working at a crude forge. In a corner of the compound, Savela Mukavokas sits on the ground cradling her grandchild. The two-year-old was born here in the prison to her daughter. Savela says both she and her daughter are unjustly accused of murder.
My husband was in prison, and when I went to see him, the soldiers arrested me too. They asked me whether I knew a certain man. And when I said yes, because we are neighbors, they said I killed him. They accused my daughter of being on a roadblock to catch Tutsis.
Until recently, Savela and her family had little hope of getting out of here. During the genocide, thousands of judges and lawyers were killed, and now the justice system is overwhelmed. 5,000 people have been tried since 1997, but at that rate, it might be a century before all the prisoners have their day in court. So Rwanda has reached back into the past for an answer. The traditional village courts known as gachachas.
The word itself comes from a type of grass.
Tarsis Karugarama is vice president of Rwanda's Supreme Court.
So if you talk of gachacha, traditionally it means people sitting in the open, in the grass, and ironing out their problems.
In Rwanda, gachachas are used to settle disputes over things like cattle and land. Village elders listen to the parties involved and then decide how best to resolve the matter.
If I had a problem at home with my wife, we would never go to court. We'd go into our families and sort it out. So that's using the communities to judge their own.
Tarsus himself is a relative stranger to the community. He's part of Rwanda's new elite, a generation of Tutsis that grew up in exile and came back after the genocide to good jobs and government posts and the task of rebuilding the nation. At Gasovu Prison, tucked high in the tea plantation south of Kabuye, a prosecutor addresses a crowd of prisoners standing patiently before him in the drumming rain. Each carries a copybook with lined paper, their dossier, with details of the accusations against them. Under the Gacaca Act, passed by the Rwandan legislature, each prisoner will be ranked by the seriousness of his or her crimes. Category 1 is the most serious. It includes organizers of the genocide and rapists. People in categories 2 through 5 are eligible to confess and maybe get their sentences halved. For example, someone sentenced to 10 years would serve 5 years in prison and 5 years making restitution by helping the community. 27-year-old Calixte Gachibarake has already confessed to killing the family of a neighbor and good friend. Calixte's story is a familiar one. He says he killed because he was ordered to.
Before the killing started, the army came to our house and told us to kill the Tutsis, and whoever doesn't participate will face the consequences.
There have been rebellions in some prisons, still dominated by Hutu hardliners, but the number of prisoners coming forward to confess is growing. Judge Tarsis says getting ready for the Gacacas has been complicated because most of the prisoners were never formally charged with a specific crime.
Immediately after the war, the arresting officers at the time didn't know the legal procedures, recording statements, writing a charge sheet. So this has been a nightmare of work. So the Gacaca process will help us to go backwards to what happened, how were you arrested, who accused you, so that the truth comes out.
But finding the truth won't be so easy. Across the road from the prison in Kabuye, a group of women sits on a bench outside a shelter for women. They were raped during the genocide and have been abandoned by their families. Their stories illustrate some of the difficulties of the Gacaca process. This woman keeps her face covered with her hands, crying continually.
As to why I'm dropping tears, it's because I even don't know the number of people who raped me. After raping me, they even infected me with AIDS.
The militia killed her husband, she says, and they kept her for months until they abandoned her in the forests of Zaire. She seems badly traumatized and says she wouldn't recognize the men who abused her. Still, Judge Tarsis is optimistic that the Gacacas will provide enough peer pressure so the truth will come out.
In our tradition, it is very rare to tell lies publicly. If you tell a lie to 100 people seated listening to you, the chances are that one person in the community would crap up and say, stupid, don't tell lies.
In Ruhasha, a hamlet in the southern province of Butare, a crowd of about 700 people, men, women, children, and old folks, sit on the ground, some of them holding striped umbrellas against the midday sun. Off to one side are 20 young men in pink uniforms, brought from the local prison for one of the first trial Gacacas. In the center of the crowd, a prosecutor from Kigali stands in white shirt sleeves.
The reason we are here is to tell the truth about the prisoners who might have acted in the genocide. If we hear about anybody who threatens a witness, they'll be punished. So even if you're sitting next to someone who participated in the killing, stand up and testify. And if there is someone who is in prison who has done nothing, you should also say that and we'll let him go home.
One by one, the prisoners come forward and people stand and tell what they saw or heard 8 years ago. Stories of murdered children, a young man who killed his teacher. Complicated details are argued back and forth. Finally, the most dramatic moment of the day. A sobbing woman accuses one of the prisoners of killing her child. But a young man comes forward and says the boy is innocent. He knows because the real killer is his own brother, who is at home. Another witness agrees. A policeman is dispatched to arrest the elder brother, and the boy who has been in prison since 1994 is freed.
He is released.
He rolls on the grass laughing and runs across the field giving high fives to the other prisoners. This afternoon, five of the prisoners are released on the spot. The other 20 are sent back to prison. Some who confessed will be released early. Others will have to stand trial in a regular courtroom and could be executed. Human rights groups are watching the Gachachas with concern. They're most troubled by the lack of any kind of defense for the accused. Judge Tarsis says despite the shortcomings, the Gachacha is a better solution for Rwanda than a Western-style court.
The notions of due process, the right of defense, if you apply them to Gachacha, they create more problems than they solve. Gachacha is a much more perfect system in the sense that its mission is much, much greater than what a trial by jury does. But here you're talking of large numbers of the population who are traumatized, who are weakened by genocide. So if you can get the community to forgive itself, to try itself, and to condemn itself, then you have built very solid grounds for reconciliation, for democracy, for everything you can think about.
When I come here, I see all these people are my friends, my relatives.
Karasira Venuste, the survivor of the school massacre, stands on the edge of the Field of Crosses. He shakes his head at the talk of reconciliation and compensation.
But he can't pull up these people, these corpses lying here. What price could you give me to buy my right arm? What price could you give?
He says the worst thing would be having to listen to the stories and see the perpetrators.
I fear that people will be traumatized, more traumatized than they are now, including myself. Yeah, I don't want to hear somebody telling me I took him into the forest, I cut, I killed. I don't wish to hear those stories. Because I would run mad.
But however painful, most Rwandans welcome the Gachachas as the only practical solution. They say the Gachachas may not bring perfect justice, but at the very least, they'll help Rwandans, Hutus and Tutsis, reach a common understanding of just what happened here in 1994. I'm Deborah George for American Radio Works and NPR News.
American Radio Works is the documentary project of NPR News and Minnesota Public Radio. There's much more about this story on our website, npr.org.